Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. I love eating as much as anything else in the world, but also it sometimes brings me conflict, shame, and all sorts of other things that are rubbish. It's complicated and I think fascinating. This is a conversation with an interesting soul, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering. Hello, I hope you're well, please. Thanks for listening to Hoovering. It's a special episode this week because, you'll be relieved to know, I'm not going to blather on now begging you to spread the word about this podcast or come to live shows or become my patron, because this episode is instead all about an incredible charity appeal. In this episode, I'm feasting and talking to the incredible Zoe Adjonyo, who I'm sure you'll know off Sunday Brunch and a million other things. Her star is seriously ascending, and she's so lovely and so talented. The food she made us was mouth and heart glowingly beautiful. We met because we're both ambassadors for this campaign. In brief, it's from a brilliant development charity called AfriKids, and the appeal is called Time to Shine. The end game of the appeal is to hugely increase the number of kids in Ghana getting a basic education. At the moment, over 65% don't, because they either can't afford the books or the uniform, or just because their kids need to be working, because they're trying to live off £1.50 a week for the whole family. It's ludicrous. And AfriKids have knocked it out the park by securing a thing called UK Aid Match, which means that between now and the 4th of March, every single penny that they make from UK donations will be matched by our government coughing up for something good. How cool is that? Very cool. So if you do anything off the back of this podcast, please may it be giving a dime or two to this appeal. AfriKids, time to shine. Go to afrikids.org/shine. On with the podcast. We met last week in Zoe's Ghana kitchen. Well, we had Ghanaian food, but full disclosure, her beautiful, cool-as-fuck kitchen is actually in Hackney, where when I arrived, everything was already sizzling away.
Outside of literally being in your kitchen, what is Zoe's Ghana kitchen?
Zoe's Ghana kitchen is...
Well, it's a lot of things. It's hard to put it into a small box, because started up the supper clubs here.
Yeah.
Pop-ups, residencies. Then I had a restaurant in Brixton.
Okay.
Which I closed in January this year.
Right.
And we still do lots of pop-ups and residencies and stuff, but mainly it's like we do a lot of catering and street food and festivals.
Yeah.
So basically, Zoe's Ghana Kitchen is a food business that celebrates West African ingredients.
Okay. Amazing. I like that.
A long story short.
Yeah, no. Well, and also that keeps it quite sort of broad as well. I mean, I don't think I know anything about food from Ghana, really.
Well, yeah,
it's
going to
be a complete education.
So when I started this, it took off very, very quickly, and I really couldn't understand why, because I didn't think I was like an amazing chef or anything.
Yeah.
I definitely wasn't like 9 years ago. I've learned a lot since then.
What are these sexy mushrooms?
They're shiitake mushrooms. These are shiitake,
yeah.
Nice.
We are making a hybrid of a dish which would normally be spinach, garden egg and okra sauteed.
Garden egg?
Yeah, garden egg is a little white aubergine. Yeah, and it looks like
nice.
So we are playing around with that. We've got some okra.
Nice.
Do you like okra?
I love okra.
Good, lots of people don't.
Oh, I love okra, but also when I looked at them just now, I thought, look at them massive, great, big, motherfucking chilies. But they're okra all along, but they're not ribbed. Oh, they little bit are.
A little bit, yeah.
Apparently, the reason lots of people don't like them is it's textural, because they're... Is there something about when liquid hits the inside of that, it goes gelatinous or something?
No, so you know what it is? These pods inside, when you cut an okra open, all these little pods have mucus in them.
Yeah, right.
So what lots of people tend to do is really chop up, because weirdly in West African food, and lots of Indian cooking, they like that mucus.
Oh, right.
For the consistency. So in okra soup and like very traditional dishes, you find it's chopped very small, so that releases the mucus in the pods.
Wow.
Some people even separately boil the okra to get even more mucus out of it then. Because obviously the reaction with the mucus and heat, gives more of the goo.
Yeah, yeah.
More goo.
More goo.
But I hated that sticky, horrible mucusy.
I don't mind a bit of it, but I wouldn't want goo soup. Bogies. It's bogies. It's ruined by bogies.
Textually.
Ultimately, if you say, yeah, I like okra, you're kind of putting your hands up to at least a childhood full of bogey eating, you think?
Yeah, I concur.
I mean, yeah.
How spicy do you like your food?
Really spicy, please.
Good.
Proper pervert for it.
Anyway, Ghana Kitchen. So why does it exist? I guess people don't know about Ghanaian food, and I realise there is this huge gap in the market where there was like lots of great traditional small hole-in-the-wall type places to eat. But, service standards didn't really match what the contemporary Western diner would want.
Yeah, fine.
To be honest, contemporary any diner, let alone.
Yeah.
And yeah, people were cooking in those places for people in the community, not looking outwards.
Right, exactly, okay.
And so, I guess we created a space where it made the food accessible.
Yeah.
Good service.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, I used to go to restaurants and it could take maybe 3 hours for a dish to come out or something, and people would look at you like, they're doing you a favour.
Or maybe that thing of like, this is coming out of a family kitchen, and that's what you wait for, like you're a kid and not a customer.
So we filled that little gap.
I think that's amazing.
People have been very kind and, organic.
Not kind, it's obviously good.
Well, yes.
Take the compliment of the success.
Yes.
I think it's fascinating as well, isn't it? I think making stuff accessible to people that won't have ever tried it before.
Yeah.
Requires a bit of confidence on everybody's part and a lot of patience on the people who are making the food's part, because you're going to have to explain stuff, much like me, moronically asking. I don't even know what this is. Is it a yam?
It is, it's a cocoa yam.
It's a cocoa yam. I guessed very slowly. That didn't show much confidence, did it? Is it a yam?
It's a cocoa yam, and they're really lovely because
they're beautiful. They do these in Lewisham Asda. And I've never bought one because I've never known what to do with it. Can I sniff it?
Yeah. I mean, they're the kind of... I mean,
it's slightly coconutty, but it's more root vegetably, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's like... I think I describe yams in the same way as, like, the West Africa, they're the carbs of the potato variety.
Okay.
So you have different types of yam. My preference is puna, because it's nice and fluffy and soft. So
lovely.
Like when you get a King Edward, it has that kind of texture and fabulous.
Yeah.
And cocoa yam... just has a very, very slight sweetness to it.
Okay.
Kind of a nutty background.
Lovely.
Very delicate.
Very nice. Gorgeous.
Part of the thing is that how do you help people get to use these ingredients in ways that's like they can build into their everyday cooking and don't have to spend 5 hours making a stew or half their life pounding fufu and stuff like that. So, adapting, interpreting, celebrating.
Is this plantain in there?
That is plantain.
So what spices are with that?
We've got ground cloves, nutmeg, cinnamon, ginger. I'm going to add a little bit. Did you say fit?
Yeah.
That's what I say about those. Yeah. Extra ginger.
Oh, fresh ginger going in there, please, if you're listening.
It'll be a nice smell. And we call this Kellywelly, so it's a style of plantain.
I've heard of Kellywelly.
Have you?
Yeah.
It's
delicious. I put my face over it and had a really nice time.
Sweet and savoury. All at once, yeah.
Please. What is your connection to Ghana?
My connection is my father is Ghanaian. So for context, my mother's Irish, so Irish-Ghanaian. It's a, you know, growing up with that mixed heritage was an interesting thing. And my mum...
In Ireland?
No, in London, South East London I grew up in. And yeah, my dad obviously used to bring home these weird and wonderful ingredients. You know those like blue, horrible plastic bags?
Yeah.
They'd be bursting with like tilapia and shito and kenke and like all this, and yam.
What are those things? What's, tell us what tilapia...
Tilapia is a fish.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's very, like, very thick, meaty flesh.
Nice.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
And shito is a hot pepper sauce made with smoked crayfish. It's a little bit like sambal.
Ooh, or that XO... Yeah. Oh, nice.
Things like this. But he used to cook. Like, he wouldn't cook for, like, the family. He'd just be cooking for himself. I'd be like,
Oh, man. What's going on in it? Nothing.
Typical bloke. But no, my dad is like a very—he was a very laconic character, very strange, odd man who kind of come in and out of my childhood,
right?
Mysteriously arriving with ingredients and then disappearing and arriving. And I guess like watching him cook or being close to him cooking, I realised that, you know, for him that food was taking him home to Ghana, and that's how I formed the connection with it. I guess part of it was to. Like hang out with my dad, maybe, but a bit more of it was realising, because we didn't have any Ghanaian family in London, whereas we used to go to Ireland like almost every weekend.
Right, okay, too much.
Too much. So I had a really, really strong concept of what my Irishness was, you know.
Yeah.
And I had zero concept of what my Ghanaianishness was. So,
yeah.
So food was the route in for me, and then I just fell in love with it, all the weird, beautiful flavours. Did I say weird? No.
Yeah.
Delicious.
Delicious. Well, it would have been weird if you were if you weren't trying that and he wasn't sharing it.
Yeah.
If he was cooking it but then not sharing it.
And people always say to me, "Oh, did your grandmother teach you to cook?" Everyone wants your grandmother to have taught you how to cook.
They do. That's so true. Why does everybody want? I think that's there's definitely a sprinkling of patriarchy in that desire, isn't there? Cooking like Nana, cooking like Grandma. There's still like a pervasive idea, a romantic idea that it can't have been our dad. My dad definitely was the one cooking in my house when I was growing up.
But he wasn't
not like a great cook.
He wasn't a great cook. Like one of the first, if you can call it a cookery lesson. I mean, I used to stand there while he was making like just like a simple stew or something. I could smell it burning. Had a keen sense of smell, aged 8. And I'd be like, "That is ready."
Yeah.
And he would come over, like, shift the pan a bit, look at the backsplash, and then he'd say, "When it's." I'm going to do an impression of what my dad sounds like now.
Yeah.
When it's on the wall, it's done.
So, so like, when it's on the wall, it's
so when
done.
It's like splattering everywhere, then it's cooked.
Say scrumdiddlyumptious.
No!
And then you can be in my podcast.
Scrumdiddlyumptious.
So one of the dishes I became well known for was this like brown nut soup. We grew up calling it peanut butter stew because it was the most delicious pot of hot, spicy, sweet. And, you know, we cooked it with, like, mutton, so, like, deep, meaty, narrowy flavours.
Is that, like, satay, really? Like, spicy
it's
satay
a bit, yeah,
soup?
It's very, very close to satay. Okay. Yeah, I think it's better,
but... Oh, I bet it is. It sounds like maybe sweeter, then. Where's the sweetness coming from in that?
Oh, all the sweetness is from the peanut.
Right.
I mean, traditionally, it's what you do. You would grind the peanut and make your own paste and all that. But, yeah, but in my house, it was Sampat. Jara Sampat, which is still my favourite brand. I'm supposed to
know
like
the
organic.
Amount of foodie people I've spoken to who have like brought up the fact that their favourite peanut butter is some sugary American Skippy or Sampat.
I don't like Skippy. Skippy is too sweet.
Simon Rimmer's a big fan of Skippy.
Speak to him about that.
This is looking and smelling off the charts.
So what have we got? I've got lots of carbs, actually, and I was... Yeah, so no, cooking bad. And then, like, you know, my mum took up the mantle of trying to keep that African food alive in the house when he wasn't around.
That's cool, that.
Yeah. And yeah, I used to cook peanut butter stew for my friends and stuff like that. And then, I don't know, yeah, food, identity. And that's how it started.
Yeah.
People just kept bugging me to keep cooking that particular dish because everyone loved it. And that's right. The dish I cooked for the first time here at Hackney Wicked, making a sign saying Zoe's famous peanut butter stew.
Yes! I love it!
Which obviously was only famous for like me and my friends.
Until then.
It was a great marketing trick.
Yeah.
And yeah, we had this, like, basically, I literally borrowed a table, because I didn't have a kitchen. We had just moved into this, and it was about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend at the time was using it as an art studio, back in the day when Hackney Wick was full of actual artists.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I borrowed a table, I borrowed a baby belling oven, and I borrowed a pot, and I went to Roman Rose. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to make a massive pot of peanut butter stew, rice and plantain.
Yeah.
Do you know Hackney Wicked Arts Festival?
No.
Oh.
I need to.
There used to be... And yeah, as I was saying, opposite me here is like artist studios, but back then, literally everybody was like, all of these were live workspaces, everyone was a fine artist or a poet or, in the creative arts or some description. And so we used to have this thing, it was like huge open studios, and for that weekend, Hackney Wick then was like a wasteland, even more than it is now.
Right.
Like way before gentrification. So there was nothing here, there was like no cafes, no anything, no way to eat. So... I saw all
the beautiful
people.
Graffiti everywhere, yeah. And like, what is all that stuff stuck up against the railings of the train station?
And,
it's cool.
Yeah, so to try and make some money. And it ended up having this like amazing party outside the house and lots of people selling out three times a day and
this
buzz around it. And it was just really fun. People were like, oh, you've got to do this again next week. And da da da. And I was like,
wow.
I don't think I will, thank you, but I'm glad you like the food. And then a year later, we turned this flat into a restaurant
right.
And called it Zoe's Garden Kitchen, and we like made loads of tables and chairs. I went to Ridley Road, bought loads of fabric. I made a Spotify playlist with Afro beats and High Life and all that.
Wicked!
It was really fun because people thought this was a restaurant. People, and it was full, like
ramming.
People trying to book for next Wednesday and next Friday. And it was like, it was a really fun, exciting time. And I just love bringing all these people together.
I love it. The joy in feeding people and then being happy with what you're feeding. I think it's real.
Yeah.
It's almost as nice as eating.
Yeah.
And you're starting doing that again out of here from the new year, from 2019.
I am. I'm just going to go and grab a lady.
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, 8 years of cooking West African food. And over that time, I've learned a lot about A, the ingredients, and B, you know, the profiles of those different things. And, you know, I keep trying to push myself, because I'm not, you know, I don't have any colouring or training or anything, so... And getting these ingredients to work in a way that's sexy on the plate is a challenge.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of selling it to people, obviously.
Of course. Has there ever been an ingredient you couldn't get your hands on in London?
Not really. I mean, I'm super
that's
lucky,
amazing.
Because I've got Ridley Road, and, you know, you have all of those West African grocers lining up. The weird trick with that is, I mean, there's certain kind of grains of spices which you can actually get really easily online, so like grains of paradise or guinea peppers, things like that.
Okay.
But every Thursday, if you go to Ridley Road every Thursday at just about 11 a.m,
right,
that's your time. If you
is this a secret you should be revealing?
I probably shouldn't.
But that's when you can get the really hard to get stuff, because that's, I guess, when things are
arrived.
Yeah,
that's when they all come in. So you cook the beans and rice together.
Yeah.
I mean, I've cooked it in a coconut oil, I had some little bit of chilies in there.
Yes.
But these leaves, yeah, they give it like this purple hue.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're not edible, but they just kind of colour it.
Oh, wow. Toasty. Oh, I love it.
This plantain is super caramelised.
They've got the best job in the world.
So are you asking me? I'm not very good at keeping a train of thought alive.
No, who is? That's the joy of podcasts, is you can edit them. You're better than me. My God, I keep interrupting the train. I sort of actively unhelp all the people I talk to. How much does, like, food vary, would you say, within Ghana?
A lot, actually, because that's one of my worst questions that I get my least favourite question is, like, how do you define food from Ghana?
It's like, well, that's a big conceptual... You're not a philosopher.
I might have been last night at 3 a.m.
That's true.
yeah, you know, you can't... Ghana, people don't understand how big Ghana is either, because it's a massive country.
Yeah.
Very, very different landscapes from the south to the north. And so, of course, the diet changes and what the main ingredients are. But, like, I mean, you can kind of think of the main staples. Like, everyone thinks of jollof as, like, the national dish. And, you know, to a point, yes, it's true. And, you know, you have kind of... The key things are, you know, your yams, your plantains, like all of the carbs that get reworked into different variations. Yeah. So for a yam, yes, you can use it like a potato, right? So you can chip it or boil it or whatever. But also that gets pounded into something called fufu, which is like it's a very starchy, sticky mound of carb.
Okay.
But it's great with stews. And, you know, and you use it as a, you pinch it and then you use it as, like, the tool to eat with.
Oh, wow, yeah. Okay. So it's like a kind of like a cross between a mash and a bread.
Yes, that's a great description. I should write that down. and you can do the same thing with plantain. You can do the same thing with cocoa.
Can you?
Yeah.
So you have put some flour in with it or something then to stir it up. It just does it naturally if you pound it.
Yeah, you boil the whatever the root vegetable is.
Yeah.
And then... You literally pound it with water. Like, the process of pounding fufu, fresh fufu, is insane.
Really?
Watch. My aunt, you have to be very, very strong.
Ripped.
And ripped to hell. And agile. Because you've got boom, boom, boom. So you've got to pound with one hand, and you've got to add water with the other.
Oh, I love it! It's almost musical.
It's like, super physical, but it's amazing.
I love it!
But, yeah, so one of the great things about what is consistent in Ghanaian food is the fact that it is... Yeah, they have so many wonderful ways of extending the lives of different things.
Right.
And lots of fermented things like locust beans and kenke.
Aha!
So those kind of processes exist up and down. But for example, on the south coast, obviously they have this amazing seafood and fish.
Okay.
And you have Lake Volta going up the kind, not quite the middle, but up the right-hand side. So, you know, all up the Volta, you get lots of different versions of tilapia, for example.
Okay.
But we're more in the north, it would be very pulse-heavy and
lots
more fermented things.
Sure, and maybe more like, I don't know, standing up animals.
A bit more goat.
Yeah, a bit more goat.
Okay, what have we got? So we've got red, guache, some sautéed okra and cocoa.
Oh, you were like, I was going to do more. And this is insane, look at all this.
And plantain, can I go there?
Say scrum diddly umptious.
No!
And then you can be in my podcast.
Scrum diddly umptious.
So in this next bit of conversation, we've segued a bit into talking about the charity and appeal that we're both backing, which is who introduced us.
Time to Shine, it's a charity that supports educating children in Ghana.
Yeah.
And they've got this amazing campaign running at the moment that's getting match funded by the government.
Yeah, that's very cool. So it's like, Aid Match UK... Which is what they... And they've had to fight this amazing charity, development charity. The whole point of them is that they don't want to exist anymore. They don't want to be needed. Over half, I think something like 65% of kids in Ghana don't get even a basic education, don't even get to go to primary school. So what this campaign is doing, what this appeal is doing, is changing that. All the money is going to go into making sure that the maximum number of children possible in northern Ghana specifically... get to have at least a primary education. And the reason they're not is because so many families are in so much poverty that they can't afford to send their kids to school because they need the money that they'll be earning even when they're little kids. A lot of the families in poverty in Ghana live off less than £1.50 a week, so they need their kids to work and not be in school. And this appeal is going towards changing that. And it runs from the 3rd of December to the 4th of March 2019. So any money that you give in that stretch of time, the government match it pound for pound through this UK Aid Match scheme. One idea I've had, I think this could fly, is if you've got someone, I think, I don't know, I've got a handful of people I've got, not got to get a Christmas present for, but will get a Christmas present for, and they're people who have got enough stuff. Like a baby, mates with a baby.
Yes.
Little babies don't really need much yet.
I don't really.
But you want to get them something because you're happy for your friends. Why don't you get them, instead of like more plastic crap and clothes that a baby's going to live in for 1 week before it's outgrown it in the universe, why don't you spend that 30 quid giving it to AfriKids Time to Shine appeal, and the government will have to give another 30 quid and you've effectively given 60 quid to a campaign that's honestly going to be changing people's lives for the better.
And you've also made your child a charitable donor.
You have. You've also, yeah. That kid, you've got rid of all the original sin of that evil baby in one fell swoop.
You've created an angel.
I need to get a picture of these hot sauces. Right, have you made these hot sauces? Of course you've made these hot sauces.
Yeah, so this one's the Shito I was talking about earlier, which is kind of like a medium version. So in that you've got lots of chilies and smoked crayfish and prawns, and then the green one is called, it's a little tiny green chili called Papo Shito.
Sounds cute. It's going to be deadly.
Cute. Exactly. Yes, exactly. It looks adorable and it punches you all over the mouth. So yeah, that's blended with coconut oil and ginger, a bit of garlic, and then this is like, I've roasted loads of different red peppers. And it's like just a red peppery.
I'm so excited. Okay, right. Okay, I'm going to try medium first.
Yeah, AfriKids. So we're also, you know, we've been working for them for about a year, really. I mean, I always try to partner with some Ghanaian charity because I worked for a long time with Kickstart Ghana.
Right.
And, you know, we used to do events with them. And, yeah, and then AfriKids is also a very cool charity. So
so cool.
Yeah, we've been, like, donating off of our menu sales or whatever.
Oh, wow, okay.
And so yeah, when they asked us to be part of this, I was like, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's a great way to get the government to spend money, isn't it?
On something good. On exactly something good. Especially at the moment, in the midst of all the chaos. That plantain's amazing. I think the fact that they don't want to exist is amazing, and I think the fact that as a charity that it's real long-term thinking, it's all about ways to putting an infrastructure in place. A lot of the money that this appeal is going to raise will go to like training teachers, partnering teacher-student relationships that mean that educating people who's, I think a lot of the time where people don't even get a basic education, their parents won't have done either. So even going in there and being able to explain and teach parents who didn't get an education themselves why it's still really important that their kids do. So the longer-term impact of it is something that they'll have factored in.
Yeah.
God, this is so yummy.
It's such a strange... I mean, I was in Ghana a couple of months ago, actually, and, you know, in Accra, there's, like, this huge amount of change that's happened over the last 10, 20 years.
Really?
Yeah. And there's so much foreign investment there because it's... Well, it's such an amazing country.
Yeah.
It's called, like, the gateway country to Africa. So if you're scared of going to Africa, go to Ghana.
Really?
And it will really calm you down about the whole thing. Well, yeah, it's just an incredibly friendly, open place to explore. And while, you know, everybody does speak English for the most part because it's a former colony.
Right.
So it's really easy to, like, exist there, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's this horrible contrast that goes on. Because I don't think of Ghana as, like, a third world country, you know? Its big cities are very developed.
Right, yeah,
and Accra is very developed. But at the same time, you know, along the coast maybe, I stayed at this amazing place called Blue Moon Lodge. Insanely beautiful. And the guy took us out fishing one morning, you know, and he was like, he was talking about the fact that, like, he couldn't go to school, basically, because he couldn't afford it. Like, his family couldn't afford to go for him to go to school.
Well, it's not just if the kid isn't working. It's that you have to buy books, uniforms, exactly, all of that stuff. And actually, if you're living on the line, that stuff's...
Oh, I mean, dinner's more important than a book, isn't it?
Yeah, totally.
Or is it?
It is to us, I think. Getting that impression. We've got that in common. I'll improvise a story tonight. Yeah. This is so delicious.
And any charity that's about engaging, you know, a community to help themselves or empower.
Yes,
community.
Exactly.
So it's a great idea.
Well articulated. Thanks. This is so delicious. That medium spicy one is so nice. And then is that the yam? It's so nice with those shiitake mushrooms. And it's so salty, I love that. That was a surprise to me and a really happy one.
Do you know what? I famously undersalt my food normally because my dad oversalted everything.
Right, right.
So did my mum actually.
And I'm from like a really salty family of salt.
Oh, really?
My dad's side. Same, like oversalt everything, but it means now I've got the same. You know. I can lick the sea.
Yeah, so.
So you undersalt things.
I try to undersalt things, but. So, you know, salt is like a. Obviously, it's a necessary balance in any dish, but. You can't take it away once you put it in, you know what I mean?
No, it's done, yeah.
Yeah.
And that red.
Mm.
The salt and the spice and everything else, but that is just a perfect thing to go with it because it's just like earthy, really deep. Yeah, really deep.
Mm.
But milder and, I don't know how to describe it other than I just want to say earthy again.
red. This is the other thing people don't realise is how many. There's all these misconceptions about what African food is and bush meat. And everyone eats bush meat and it's all like greasy, meaty stuff. And it's really not. Like, so many amazing vegetables and grains and pulses. And a lot of the staples in people's diets are vegan or vegetarian because meat is a luxury, actually.
Yeah.
Until China has suddenly started flooding Ghana with a cheap chicken, which is
really
I'm really not happy about it actually.
That's what,
hear me, I'm really not happy about it.
Well, I'm not happy about it either, and I didn't know. Learning.
Well, this is one of the negative changes I noticed.
Okay, industrialization of the cities, global economy, etc., etc. An influx of horribly bred masses of chicken.
Exactly, and it's really unnecessary because you know there is so much farmland, and inherently, you know, guinea fowl, which is very big in that's our kind of natural poultry,
right?
And like spent hens, they are like the most organic kinds of poultry you can get.
Spent hens, just to be super clear, is a hen that's finished laying, and so then you eat her up.
Yeah,
perfect.
Thanks.
But she's had a nice long life.
She's had a good run.
Yeah, just having loads of eggs.
And yeah, there was like 5 KFCs in Accra, and I was like,
what?
I know. And people were saying to me that even KFC use imported Chinese chicken, and I was happy to hear actually that people have been kind of boycotting KFC because of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I met some great chefs. I was really lucky to do a supper club in Accra actually with a chef.
Wow.
Yeah. With Chef Binta and Chef JJ, well, Chef J, sorry, otherwise known as Makasi Sheik. And we did a supper club together, and we just got on famously. We'd never met before. Was talking about our love of food and like how do you honour tradition and like move the food forward and all of that stuff. And we're all like on the same page. And we're talking about, because another thing is that I found it really hard to get hold of fonio and millet and these grains that are indigenous there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what is happening now? Like, and people don't use chop bars in the same way they used to. So chop bar is like, you know in Bali, like a warung, do you know those?
No, you're going to have to
So it's like a, let's call it a roadside eatery.
Right.
So it's like, but it's not fish and chips. So
yeah,
it's
of course.
Like, it's substantial
yeah.
food, but it's not a restaurant and it's not street food.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the middle.
An equivalent here, maybe like a greasy spoon that does like, or like this. In Southeast London, there's lots. I say lots. There's probably like 3 now, but like Irish cafes actually.
Really.
But where you can get like this one called Maggie's by Lewisham Station that's been there forever.
Wow.
But where it's fry ups, but also you can get omelettes, jacket potatoes, and then like it's sturdy.
Mm. Yeah.
You know that kind of stuff.
Proper food,
but it's not like high end. It's affordable.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also not fish and chips. You wouldn't get a takeaway. You'd sit in there.
Mm.
Yeah.
Sorry, my mouth is full.
Tea from a big urn.
Oh yeah, so but you have this huge sort of growing middle class who are basically dissociating now because there's also lots of fancy Western restaurants. There's like high-end Italian and French and Japanese and
right.
You know, it's all very aspirational, which is understandable to want to attach to those things, but it does mean that distance has been created between people and their relationship with their own ingredients and food. We decided it was problematic. And then part of that discussion, we were like, okay, how can we like make changes about this?
Mm.
And so we decided to create an African food forum.
Ooh.
Ambitiously. So that comes with 3 things. One, for me, there's 2 big parts. One is about celebrating African chefs in Africa. And that's because of my concern about cultural appropriation and, you know, getting the right attention to the right people who are making this food.
Yeah.
And celebrating that. And then obviously having this conversation about sustainability and the environment and how do you get people farming their own land again before it all gets bought up and there's nothing left to farm. And all that. So, yeah, it's an exciting big project that hopefully will come together.
What's it called? I'll put a link in the thing. Africa Food Forum.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
And so we're doing lots of, like, basically the idea is to take some chefs on a tour.
Yeah.
So take them to New York, take them to San Francisco, cook at James Beard, cook at Murad.
Wow.
Do some stuff in London with me. And
brilliant.
Get, like, a nice momentum going for people to, you know...
Wicked.
Yeah.
I mean, on a selfish note, tell me when these people are here so that I can do podcasts with them as well. Not just so I get to eat their food, but I will now, you know, make more people aware that who these people are.
Mm. That's a great idea.
I think that there's lots of countries, even if you look at, like, lots of stuff that grows in England, there's all sorts of wild herbs and stuff like that. Just went out of fashion with the Tudors, you know what I mean? But there's stuff that, and now you're totally avant-garde if you go out foraging. Or you, I mean, that stuff's coming back. I mean, in the 80s, 90s, you would have looked like a lunatic for wanting to go out and make something out of what is available around you.
Yeah.
Even 70s, I suppose, but like there was a good 20, 30 years where that would be like, what are you thinking? Basically, post-World War II, then it all went to shit, and it's just sort of coming back, that idea of provenance, etc.
One of the negative impacts of, it's the industrialisation of food that happened after the war, wasn't it? It's like, how do you've got to feed all these people who've been impoverished and on rations for the last however long. And it did, that's why we have so much factory chicken and terrible stuff.
That's the only reason I flirt with veganism, by the way. I'm not worried about animals dying per se. I think they're delicious. It's just the scale of it.
Yeah, and it's a problem.
Yeah.
But you know, that's another interesting thing, because it's going to happen to, like, the... I nearly said the vegan economy, and I don't think I've ever heard that phrase before, but I like it.
Well, there's an economy there. Yeah, there's definitely people rinsing it.
But it's also, like, that is going to become industrialised as well. So it's all very well saying
A lot of vegan diets just do involve lots of food that will have come from a really long way away.
Mm.
And like we were saying earlier, when things become a fad, it can, if you're not careful, really bollock up the place that it's coming from. Like quinoa, apparently... was a kind of staple carb in Bolivia, and now Bolivians can't afford it.
Mm. And avocados, Venezuela.
Yeah, avocados, the amount of water it takes to grow an avocado. it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I've got long train journeys for the rest of today. I don't have to sort of engage my brain again. really.
Yeah.
I've got bits of things to prep, but I don't actually have to stand in front of people or meet a new person or whatever until this evening now.
I don't have to see anyone.
Oh,
but
yes.
I do have an inbox to deal with.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, there's that. But no one needs to know what state of alertness you're in for that.
I can be in my... And often I am. No idea. I wake up at, like, 6 in the morning.
Really?
I've got a really bad habit. I don't know if I should be saying this publicly, but I wake up 6 in the morning, have my coffee, have a fag.
Yeah.
And I can... It has happened that I will sit in my pyjamas all day working.
Oh, yes, please. Yes, please. That's the dream.
Yeah.
And conversely, if I'm up early and I don't have... and I don't have to... I mean, this is the gig economy. That's the major upside, really.
Mm.
That and the flexi hours. It's the gym jams. yeah, conversely, if I'm not working of an evening, I get in my gym jams when I'm getting my kid in his gym jams.
Yeah.
Which is sort of at 6:30. Yeah.
That is comfort, though.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes there's only been a few-hour window with clothes, normal outdoor clothes.
I mean, I think one of my ideal days is, like, you know, when you have a proper cosy duvet day and you're just, like, in your dressing gown, so cosy, like,
yes.
Mugs of tea, biscuits.
Mm.
Just watching, like, binge-watching something.
A whole series, yeah.
Yeah.
I've just... My son is 3 and I am... He's just become intelligent enough to endure an entire film on a shit weather day. Not, it has to be a cartoon, and there will be a lot of questions asked by him about what's going on. But I don't mind watching a kid's film. That is, and there needs to be quite a steady snack stream.
Oh yeah,
in going. But that feels quite like, yeah, oh, is it raining? Let's watch Tangled. Yes!
Get Tangled. In!
5-second rule, yes or no?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, good, thank you, please.
I actually call it a 30-second rule.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I grew up in a house where 30 seconds was very agreeable.
Yeah, totally fine. Yeah. Same here. And we had a dog. But I'm rarely ill.
No, I'm never ill. I've got a stomach like steel.
Yeah, nails. You know?
Yeah.
That's why. Yeah. It's because
grew up on
dirt.
Grew up on dirt. And also things like my mum, like, she used to cook like a beautiful pot of like some, let's say it was like Irish stew or something.
Yeah.
Stereotypically Irish.
Yeah.
And it would just sit on the hob for like 4 or 5 days and it just got better every day.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, people, no, that's gorgeous.
People don't like that kind of thing anymore, do they?
What, because they think this needs to go in the fridge and
I mean, obviously... I'm not advocating
using your fridge.
I'm not advocating eating 5-day-old stew. Unless you are confident about what's happened in the making of it.
Unless you have...
And the storing of it.
Superhero's tummy.
But no, I mean, obviously as well, cooking for a restaurant is different than cooking at home. But
There is that. And so anything that you eat in a particularly like ritualistic way, it often seems to be with confectionery that people have like a thing or like a type of, I don't know, whatever. It's a broad question.
It is broad, isn't it? Ritualistic. As in like I have to have, like, so if I had like a packet of chocolate digestives, I'd have to have a cup of tea next to me.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody does because they're dry. I mean, they're delicious, but they are dry.
But what, you wouldn't have them with a cold drink?
No, absolutely not.
Wouldn't you?
No.
Okay, well see, that's the kind of thing that people think, oh, no, that I think that's normal, and you go, no, that isn't.
Oh, no, you need that warmth in your mouth.
Right.
But I don't dunk.
Yeah. Oh, you don't dunk?
No dunking.
Too scared of the fall off?
The fall off. The droop. Flop.
Live your life. Live your life to an extreme, so...
I'm just not there yet. I'm not ready.
I feel like I've just advocated bungee jumping.
I don't want,
really,
like...
Just dunking.
But I think it's because it's got chocolate on it. I don't like a chocolate... When the chocolate slides off into the mug, I want to feel that crispy, crunchy chocolate in my mouth. But, for example, a bourbon or a custard cream, happily dunk.
Sturdy.
So, yeah,
sturdy, firm. heavily processed. they weren't they? There's not gonna they a are. Bit of that's not gonna fall off. I remember the very first time a bit of biscuit fell off into a cup of tea, thinking I'm quite naively excited about when I got to it at the bottom, and it was really gross. Yeah. I mean, it's really gravelly. It's like liquid MDF.
I'm in my tongue.
I still haven't finished explaining Sankofa. Okay, hang on.
Okay, tell me about Sankofa.
So, having done all this amazing... Oh, I was talking about travelling around Africa. So, I made a documentary with CNN Africa in Kenya and Uganda about food and food culture, and I did it all through the lens of women who cook.
Oh, wicked.
And that was great fun, and I learnt loads. And then I also had this very weird gig at the beginning of the year with a cruise liner whose name I probably can't mention, but...
Oh my god, I tried doing comedy on a cruise and it went so badly I did a whole show about it.
Did you?
A whole Edinburgh and a whole tour called The Silence of the Nans.
Oh, it's amazing!
It was one of the worst things.
It's a very interesting environment, isn't it?
Oh, please.
So there's this cruise around West Africa, basically, and I was doing, like, chef demos, apparently, and that was it, really.
Yeah.
But there was that, you know, got on this boat and it was literally like a floating nursing home.
Yeah.
And I was like,
it's like a floating thanet.
What is that? Yeah, floating thanet as well, that's right, yeah. And I'm like, why am I here?
Yeah.
I mean, the fun and not fun part was the weather was so terrible for the first.
Oh, no!
It took us about 4 days to get out of the port of Spain.
Oh, no! That's quite funny.
And my wife, Sarah, had the worst seasickness.
Oh, no!
So in the end, I didn't have to do very much. And when I did do the demos, weirdly, they actually interacted with it like really positively, and everyone was definitely over 70, you know, but they loved the food and they loved talking to me about the food, and everybody knew someone who had spent time on the colonies.
So. Oh god, I'm not into it.
So on that cruise, I got to go to like Gambia, Senegal, and a few other places. Yeah. So I picked up some tips on the way down there.
Oh, wicked!
And basically, so after 8 years of going to kitchen. I mean, I love my business, obviously, but as a chef and as a person who's fairly creative, you know, that vehicle doesn't allow me to play around with all those other recipes and stuff. Sankofa means go back and fetch it.
Okay.
So it's, I guess the idea is it's more of a I hate that phrase, Pan-African, but I can't think
of it. I like the sound of it. I mean, there's a reason why it's brought on. Pan-African.
So it's like doing...
It makes you sound clever, doesn't it?
Pan-African. Intercontinental Africa.
Continental
Africa? I don't know. Continental Africa. It's Africa.
You could call a cookbook Sauce Pan-Africa. I'm my own boss and I want you to know I've just fired myself.
Sauce Pan-Africa.
No, don't ever actually do that. No, I'm sorry I said it out loud.
But it's funny though. That could be a hashtag. So anyway, it's a celebration of what I consider to be, well, you know, it's an accumulation of my experiences and recipes so far, and what is my continued, I guess, investigation into what all these amazing profiles are. So it's like, but to do it in a little bit more of a slightly grander way. So it's like these 8-course tasting menus with like wine flights, and so I get to learn to sort of utilise some of the technical, I guess, skills I've acquired over the last few years in particular, because I've been lucky enough to cook alongside... I mean, I've never done a stage, or I've never worked in anybody else's restaurant, actually. Mm-hmm. So it is very much like the hard work of teaching yourself how to do this thing.
Yep.
But alongside that, I have had... I cooked at the World Culinary Institute of America.
Wow.
And I was, like, Jeremy Chan was there, Shola was there, Chef JJ, like, some amazing chefs. And again, I thought, why am I here?
No imposter syndrome, please.
But I learned so much in that, just in that week, like watching it. And they were all like using very similar ingredients to me. And I was like, oh, I didn't know you could do that.
Get in.
I know. So it was great fun. And then I also cooked at James Beard. So I've learnt loads that I would like to apply, but I can't really do those applications in the Ghana kitchen context because it's fast casual. My customers have a very specific price point and stuff like that, and that's fine.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Because you want everyone to be able to eat it, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, Sankofa, March 2019, new concept.
Excellent! Sankofa.
Yeah.
Tell me what it means again.
Go back and fetch it.
Go back and fetch it. You might. That really does sound like something I bark at my kids.
I was just about to say, it sounds like something you say to the dog.
Yeah. And is that how you spell it? S-A-N-K-O-F-A?
Yeah. But really,
it's awesome.
I mean, that, when I hear that, I think of what I've been doing and what lots of people do, is like going back to your roots and bringing it into your situation. Your present context.
A really heavy jar of magic appears, which contains the power to make brilliant education available for free for everyone everywhere in the world, so that amazing appeals like AfroKids' Time to Shine are no longer necessary. But the jar needs smashing open, and only you can do it, weirdly. To smash it open, you have to run 20 miles on a treadmill whilst also singing If You're Happy and You Know It, clap your hands, whilst also doing all the actions. Tap your head, there's... I think you pat your knees without stopping for a break ever. It sounds impossible, Zoe, but you do it. You're a hero.
And then what?
Your reward. And then what? She's like, that's easy. Too easy. Your reward is the feast of your dreams.
Oh, wow.
Obviously, you haven't had a shower or whatever, you want to feel human again. But, you know, you're hungry. You've worked for it. None of the food has to be possible. Or it doesn't have to exist. This can all be theory, nor do any of these answers. So I want to know what you'd eat, what you'd drink, who with, and where.
Oh, wow, that's great, that question. I'm still feeling tired from all the stuff I've done mentally. Just like,
was a long paragraph, I'm sorry.
What will I mean, I know I'd eat at home, I think.
Nice.
I think I'd have
an awesome home.
I like being at home, I like eating at home, I like the cosiness of it. And I'm not into... I mean, I like going to nice restaurants, obviously, when I can afford it. But I'm not like... I don't know. I just like the environment, cosy home.
Yeah.
So it'd be at home. How many people are for dinner?
It's up to you.
Oh, okay.
You don't have to have anyone there if you don't want.
Oh, no. I would definitely have Anthony Bourdain.
Wow.
I would have Oprah.
Yeah. Yes!
Probably Michelle Obama has to come.
Oh, she's got to be everything.
Ava DuVernay.
Oh, nice.
Do you know, I used to always want... Oh, for Hirsch. I used to always want... what's his chops? Not Will Self. I did have a weird fascination with him. But you've got so many of his books.
You have got a lot of his books. There's just something sexy about his misery. Yeah. About his malaise. I don't know if I'd want him... Well, this is your dinner party.
No,
I don't know why I'm even joining
I've
in.
I've very much grown out of Wilson. So I've got Ave DuVernay, Oprah, Michelle, Anthony Bourdain, Tina Fey.
Nice.
I think that's enough. I think that's a good balance.
Yeah, lovely. That's a lovely balance.
And what would we eat? Oh, God damn, that's so hard. I think what I would drink would be like the best... red wine in the world available. I don't know what that is.
Nope.
But it was
listeners tweeting. Tell us what that is.
It would probably be a bottle, I reckon, that would normally cost a human something like a grand.
Something out of some fusty cellar.
I would never spend that kind of money on wine, but this is a dream. And then food. Oh, God. I want to say groundnut soup. But
yeah, have that.
That means I'm cooking, isn't it?
No. Oh, really? There's no one... Have you ever had groundnut soup? I like this! But it's a busman's holiday. This is it entirely... You can make this up, so you could have made it whenever. You're not cooking this evening if you don't want to be.
Okay, good.
It can be as good as yours, but no graft required from
you. Okay, great. So we'll have a delicious, massive vat of peanut butter soup. With beautiful, beautiful hogget. And some plantain fufu, and I'm going to make everybody eat with their hands.
Yes!
That's it. And plantain on the side.
A pudding?
I'm not a huge pudding person.
Me neither. You don't have to have one.
Tell you what, though, we'll have a Scotch bonnet ice cream and a hibiscus sorbet.
Scotch bonnet ice cream?
And a mango filling and a chin crunch. That is the best dessert that we... Well, I say wait, me and my wife have ever created for our menu, and that's what I'll give them.
Scotch bonnet ice cream.
Yeah, it's delicious.
That sounds off the charts. I've only ever once had a chili ice cream, and it was in it's an Italian restaurant in here, on Oak. Yeah.
They're not known for their spice, is it?
No. And the restaurant, I'll look it up, and put it in the notes. It's really lovely, tiny little independent restaurant, and it looks like nothing.
It's like Honor Oak.
Yeah, it's like behind. If you come out of Honor Oak station, you go down the road to where the T junction is, and then there's like another road where the bus depot is. Where the anyway, this is very local and specific. This is just for people that live in Broccoli, Ladywell.
Are you lost in Honor Oak?
It's like a little. It's like a little back road of like post office, random little independent, you know, spa, tiny, you know, offie or whatever. And then there's this place that looks like nothing. And I raved about it, and a friend took his partner there, and she totally misunderstood and like got real dressed up.
Oh.
It's not that kind of place. And he was livid with me. But all I was doing was talking about food. I was like, this food, this food. Yeah, I do the opposite.
I'm always under.
We're in our gym jams. But this place is, the food is fine. They only ever really have two or three things on the menu. Respect for that. A pizza, a fish thing, a pasta thing. That's that. What it's great for is they make all their own ice cream. And there's some wonky-ass flavours in there. There's like garlic, whatever. But the chilli one is the one of the few permanent flavours. And it's slow. It doesn't get you at first. It's all about, and it makes you wait for that.
Do you know what? Speaking of wonky flavours, Lee from Black Axe Mangal, who is also at World of Flavours Culinary Institute Convention in California, he made a foie gras ice cream. Now, it was insanely delicious. Insanely. I don't know what
terrifying
brilliant mind he has to put that as a combination, but...
genius.
It's very delicious.
Wow.
I don't even really... I'm not a huge fan of foie gras.
No, me neither. I'm like, for all the agony, is it worth it? But yeah, in a context like that, if you're going to find something new to do...
Yeah, but it was great.
As part of, like, some fun experimenting, why not?
How cool was that? Good Lord, it made me hungry listening back. I can't tell you how much I'm all over that cookbook too, and how dead set I am hitting up one of Zoe's supper clubs in the new year. She's on all the socials, where she'll be putting details of everything she's up to as at Ghana Kitchen. But forget all the usual stuff about getting in touch with and following me. This episode, please, just donate to this appeal. If you get any spare money at all before the 4th of March, please go to afrikids.org/shine. And thank you in advance for that. Hoovering is produced by Emma Corsham, and the music is by Mike Greenway. Until next week, happy hoovering.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.